Boom, we're on. And today's guest, we've got Bill Gardner. How are you, Bill?
Thanks, James.
Yeah, thanks
nice
for coming on.
Lovely.
West Ham legend. Been in the Tennessee's many, many years. Yeah. Very well known in the game. First and foremost, how are you, brother?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
All right, thank you.
You've just released your new book as well, The Man, The Myth, The Legend.
Yeah, it came out in November. It's been doing well.
This is your second book?
Yeah, I've done one with Cass.
Yeah. How was that then?
What, the first one or the second one?
Second one.
The second one was, I wouldn't have done a second one, but the fellow helped me write it, Abe, I know him as Mozza, he didn't want to do the typical football hard man books, and I didn't want to do that either. I wanted to tell people what my life was like that led to that, you know, that led to me to be the way maybe I was, which was the way my life's mapped out. It was all down to the beginning.
Yeah, you've led a very interesting life. Homeless as well as a kid.
Yeah, I
was quite a tough 14. Upbringing. Yeah. I always go back to the start of my guest, Bill, where you grew up and how it all began to get a better understanding of yourself.
I was born in Hornchurch in Essex. My dad worked at Ford's and my mum didn't work a lot. And I was the only child of them. They'd lost their daughter before me. And I sort of like come along and I wasn't wanted. But to the outside world, my mum was a doting parent. But behind four walls, I'm afraid it was nothing like that. I was abused in every shape and form. Not by my dad. My dad never laid hand on me. But my mum certainly did. She used to bash me with a broom handle and this big lump of rubber. And I used to get it for doing nothing. You know, I wasn't a bad kid. She got the police to come round once. I don't know why, but she got him to come round once. And from about 10 to 14 when I left, the copper never stopped bothering me. He see me on the corner of a road. He see me playing football. He'd try and pick fault. And in all fairness, I was doing nothing more than any other kid was doing at that time. And then my mum had a serious operation. And she walked out while she was still under the anaesthetic and walked home from Romford Hornchurch, and her nightdress was covered in blood. And we think it turned her. And in all fairness, I couldn't live much longer there because she tried to stab me and my dad one night. She come through the door with a knife, bread knife. It was like a scene from The Shining. So my dad said, you've got to go. He said, if you don't go, she's going to kill you. So I'll give it about 2 or 3 weeks. Got together a few bits and give it some thought. Thought, where am I going to go? And I lived in a graveyard in a church in Aldgate. And I lived in there for 10 months, except for one night when I managed to get into a refuge. But the one night was enough for me because you have to hold your things because they try and nick them off you. I had a bag, they tried to nick it. So I got talking to a couple of people and they said, yeah, if you want some work, you go to Finchley Road Station in the morning and you wait there and the builders come round and say, you know, they want 3 or 4 men. And I was big for my age, well, really was, you know. And I worked with some gypsies from Hertfordshire, worked for them for quite a few months and learnt how to do tarmacking and laying curbs in a road, which I had my own business in the end doing that. And I done pit fighting, where you go down in a hole 12 foot by 12 foot, go in a ladder, and the one who gets out wins the money. People bet on you and all that. And I done quite well with that money. And I had 4 fights. I won 4, but one of them was a brute. He looked like the bloke from, in the film, The 300, when they pulled a bloke along with the chains, he looked like him. And I thought, at first I thought, oh no, what you done here, you idiot, you know? And then I thought, well, look at the state of him. His ears were battered, his nose, his head. I thought, no, I can do him. And then I went out there, I whacked him first of all in the bollocks and he was wearing them as earrings. And I thought, well, and as his head come down, I caught him with a beauty and I knew with the second one he was gone. And I didn't take liberties. He put his hand up, say he had enough, and that was how it used to end. You either said enough or you knocked him out. So he said enough and I climbed out and grabbed me dough and got away a bit rapid, you know, because when you got all them sort of characters out there, they're not gentlemen, you know what I mean? So I sodded off and I used to hide the money in the wall in the church. There was a hole. No one would have ever found it. In fact, some of it was still there 3 years later when I went back. And I used to use part of it to live. And it was a lot of money. It was a fair bit of money at the time. I mean, a lot of people said to me, you could have got a flat for that money, bought a flat in them days for that money. And I most probably could have done. But if I walked into a building society or someone said, yeah, it's $6,000 cash, they're on the phone to the police. And as I was on the run, I couldn't do that. So I just had to try and be a bit wise, keep the dough. And then when things sorted out a few years later, I bought my first car with it. That was a disaster.
Why?
Well, it never went. I had a car that never went. I think half a daily sold it to me. But no, it was all right. It was all right. I didn't regret it. It was a learning curve for me.
Must have been sad though, Bill, to be abandoned at that age, to then be homeless.
It was... I had a bit of cover over me, like concrete from the church. And I used to, obviously, you learn very quick when you're outside what to do. So what I did, I had cardboard. I used to sit on cardboard. I had two changes of clothes. And when I used to work, if I got wet, the first thing I used to do was try and find a swimming pool, go in a swimming pool, get clean, wash me clothes, and then I hung them up on a nail that was in the wall to a fence. But in the winter, they don't dry. So you put your clothes on in the morning, just a little bit less wet than it was the night before. That was tough. And I used to sit there, and I'll be honest with you, truth with you, I used to get tearful. And I used to think, where do you go from here? And I could have gone to drink and drugs, but I never did. In fact, I never took a drink until I was about 50. I've always been teetotal and always like trained and that. And, you know, now I'm 67, nearly 68. But being outside in all them weathers, it don't do you no good in the end. You know, when I see my boys going out with hardly nothing on, I say, look, get a coat on or something. As you can always take it off because you end up ill.
Why did you not drink then, Bill? Is that because your mum and dad drank?
No, they never drank.
Never drank either?
No, they both never drank. I just never liked the taste, in all fairness. It wasn't for me and drugs weren't for me. And... I regard my life as being really boring. I know some people find my life, I believe my upbringing was terrible, but I don't think my life's been that terrible. We've been with the same girl now for nearly 40 years and we're really happy. I've got three kids, but my daughter I don't see no more from my first marriage. And in all fairness, I've got two regrets, and one of them, he's not keeping in touch with her and trying to get through the barriers that were put up for me not to see her. So at the end of the day, that's how that worked. And then obviously I used to look forward, the 6 days I was stuck there doing that, I used to work five, sometimes three. If they didn't need me, obviously I wouldn't get no work for the day. And I just used to look forward to going to football with West Ham. I regarded my mates at West Ham as my family.
What about schooling? Did you ever go to school, Bill?
Yeah, I went to school. I mean, I'll be honestly truthful with you. I'm not an uneducated person because I used to read a lot. I used to read a lot of books on a lot of subjects. And when I went back to school and I'd done the tests, because once they captured me, the social services captured me in the graveyard, they put me in care in Ormchurch. And I went back to school. Obviously, I had a lot of catching up to do, but I used to finish in the top three in the class, and I never went to school. So, you know, I thought to myself, hold on, maybe reading the books has done you some good. You know, I'm very good at history, geography, general knowledge, hopeless at maths, hopeless at English, to be fair with you. But, you know, I'm quite good on them subjects, and I always had a big interest in sport and football, you know. With doing the boxing, taekwondo, wrestling, I'd done a bit of everything. I really enjoyed it.
When did you fall in love with West Ham?
I was 5 years old. My dad was a Spurs fan. He used to take me to Tottenham back in 61. Sorry, I was 7 years old. They had a great team there. They won the double and they was good. But I never felt comfortable there. I never felt comfortable there. I never did. And he'd go Tottenham 1 week, West Ham another. I think he only used to take me to West Ham the other week to get out the house away from me mother, you know. So at the end of the day, when I went over there, I really enjoyed it. I loved the people. I felt at home, you know. And then as I got older and I met different people from different generations, I regarded them as my family. You know, I've been let down a few times by a few people over there, but basically they've all been all right.
Yeah, that's the main thing that you're always going to get.
I've got friends that go back 50 years that I've known, play football with them, you know what I mean, as a kid. Mm-hmm. But and they're still my friends now. And you know yourself, as you get older, you make new friends, new generations of people. And I'm now friends with kids that are the sons of dads whose dads I was friendly with. So it's gone like three generations, which is amazing.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah. What age did you get off the streets, Bill?
Well, when they captured me, I was 14 and a half when I went. I was about 15 and a half, I was. I went back to school the first term of the other year. They took me back to school because obviously they wanted to see if I learned anything, you know, what I was going to do. And the careers lady said to me, the most you can hope for is a job in Romford Market. And I thought to myself, yeah, I'll show you, I can do better than that. And I did. So, you know, I run my own business. I had a few people working for me. And I had a great reputation. I had the best reputation on checkertrade.com. And when I retired a couple of years ago, I've given the business to my son, James, and he's doing well.
Good name.
Yeah.
What business were you doing, Bill?
We do hard landscaping, like driveways, patios, turfing and fencing in the Surrey area where I live now.
And when did you start? Because I know the football hooligans and the ICF, you've never really associated with that.
I was never in the ICF. People have put me in about 30 books saying that I was in there. I was not. Even the policeman who nicked me said I was, but I was not. I've never been in a gang. I go my own path. I go my own route. And that's the only way. Then, like anything else, like you said before we had the interview, is trust. And I couldn't trust many people. I do now. I trust quite a few. But, you know, at the end of the day, I was a loner. I was a loner that had a lot of friends, a lot of people that liked me, used to hang around with me. But we wasn't no part of any named gang, and we never sat around no table plotting violence. We went to football. And if somebody tried to stop us going to football, that was it. That's when it went off. And I think that can be said the same for a lot of teams and a lot of people. It's like I wasn't having it. I couldn't stand there and watch my friends, who I called my family, getting hurt. You know, there's right and wrong. I know right from wrong, you know what I mean? And at the end of the day, I thought, you know, this is the path I've got to take. And it was the path I did take. And it led to me being nicked and 16 weeks and 2 days in the High Court on trial till they found out the evidence has been fabricated. And that was that. But they still never forget. You know, I can sit in the stand sometimes and you feel like somebody's got their eyes on you, and I look down and they're looking up, you know, waiting for me to do something or say something wrong, but they won't get it. I'm afraid they got no chance of that, so they might as well look somewhere else.
Were you not public enemy number one at some point?
At one stage, I think I was in the top five in the country that they was after, but they had to frame me up by telling lies, you know. And I ain't saying I didn't do it, because I just said I did, but not when they said I did. Yeah, I wasn't doing it. When my boy was born, that was it for me. I didn't want him to grow up without a dad. I didn't want him to go to school and say, your old man's in prison. I didn't want it, you know. Some people are proud of that thing. Yeah, I've been a Nick and my boy's like, yeah. Not me. I don't want that for my family.
Do you remember your first tear-up, Bill?
First tear-up was at primary school. Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, with another lad there that I was quite friendly with. One of them things, then I joined the boxing club and started doing a bit there at Elm Park Boxing Club, and they're nice people.
Did you enjoy it, the fighting, or was it just more to defend yourself, especially being homeless?
I enjoyed the fighting. I enjoy competition. You know what I mean? I like competition.
Combat?
Yeah. Yeah.
What about for West Ham?
It was a thing that had to be done for me. It wasn't a case of taking a backward step. You know, if some loads of them in front of us bouncing up and down, they didn't bounce up and down too much. You know what I mean? But like I say, just the way it was, life was like that for a lot of us, for every team, you know. I'm good mates with a Chelsea fan now. He was about the same age as me. And he said the same, you know, it was our generation of things. Every generation has something, doesn't it? I mean, I think this current generation are all wired up on their iPads and their phones and then getting out their knives and sharpening them, what I can make of it, where every day you hear of a stabbing somewhere or other.
Do you remember your first tear up with West Ham?
Blimey. I must have been 12.
12?
Yeah, 12. Yeah, I think 12 away somewhere. Would have been about when I was 12. It might have been Birmingham.
What was that experience like?
Pretty frightening, to be fair with you. You know what I mean? I wasn't new to it, but it was different, you know, the atmosphere. And it wasn't one person in front of me, there was lots. So I just watched the people near me and done what I had to do, you know, just have a go. You know, I'm a little boy, I'm 12 years old. But I was quite big. At 12, I most probably looked 16, 17. When I was 14, I looked 20. You know what I mean? I had a full growth of hair on my face in them days, and my head at the time. But that's disappeared now. But it was just the way my life was, yeah, the way it panned out. You know what I mean? I wouldn't sit here for 1 minute and say I was a villain, I was a criminal, I was a gangster. I weren't none of them things. I weren't none of them. I was a survivor. I survived. When I used to live outside, I used to make sure I had everything I needed. Swiss Army knife, pair of scissors, some nylon string. I had a crystal radio. You know what crystal radio is? Crystal radio is, it was about that big, and you wind it up. It has no batteries. You wind it up, and it goes for about half an hour, and then you have to wind it up again. But I had that, and that was part of my little bag I had when I left home. And a tin opener, because obviously I needed to, in them days, didn't have ring pulls. You had to open them up and that. I ate more HP beans out of a can, most probably, than the beans they put in at the factory. God, because, you know...
You must have been farting at football.
Oh, mate. I think that's why they kept away from me, I think. But no, it was just the way life was for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, it wasn't easy. And like I say, when I found, when I was like the 12-year-old, the young lad, I followed this group of men up the road at Derby County when we played. And they was all 20 years older than me. And I thought, well, these are the people to be with. And one bloke was barking out the orders for us what to do. And I thought, well, this sounds all right. And I followed him. And the poor old boy, he's now dead. Like a lot of them are, you know, you get to that stage. But I had loads of good people around me. And to be fair, like I've said, not every one of them was a fighter. But they all had amazing bottle. And they would never leave me like I would never leave them. There's no one on this planet can say I ever left a man down. If a man went down, I picked him up. And it was the same when I worked on the door. If a doorman went down, I'd pick him up.
Was West Ham the first time you'd ever felt part of a family?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I always felt unwanted at home. We never had a Christmas. Our Christmases were no trees, no decorations. We used to get a present. I used to get a present. My dad used to get a pair of slippers every year. He had so many slippers. He could open a shoe shop. And then they'd have a fight. They'd always have a fight on a Christmas day because my mum was seeing another man opposite and they used to cook the dinner over there and bring it back on a tray for me and my dad. And he'd say something to her about, come home here or something. I think my dad really loved her because I don't know any man would have stood at what he did. She carried on with this bloke for 30 years. I called him Uncle Ted. He was all right. He was a nice fella. But... You know, I was a kid. I didn't know right from wrong, you know what I mean? I didn't know that part of it, marriage and all that. I didn't understand that bit. And I just thought, oh, Uncle Ted's a friend and that was it. But I used to play him around a bit because I used to, when I got a little bit on a bit, I was about, how old would I be? I'd be about 12. I used to go over there and he'd say, you going anywhere, Bill? And I think, oh, they want me out of the way to get at it, you know what I mean? I used to say, no, I want one going to pictures. And he'd go, how much is that? And I'd say, oh, 3 shillings. Oh, all right. So I said, how am I going to get there then? He said, oh, how much is the bus? And I'd say, oh, 2 shillings. And I said, I'll be hungry when I come out. He said, what do you want? I said, well, fish and chips. So I'd get the fish and chips money. I'd get the ice cream money out of him and some sweets. Mm-hmm. And I used to go down the road, and I reckon before I got on the bus, they was at it, you know what I mean? They actually got at it in the bed next to me when I was a little boy, really little, six. I was in bed asleep, and I heard my cot was going up, because I slept in a cot till I was eight. And I felt this shaking, and I looked around, and he was on top of me mum, giving her one. And he went, shh, go back to sleep. Yeah. And I didn't know them in them days. I just thought that was life. That was the life that we all have, you know what I mean? And then she sometimes used to touch me inappropriately, apart from the beatings. And everything was mental torture. I got told a lot of times, you shouldn't be here, Anne should be here. That was my sister who died. I was told a lot of times, we don't want you. And I think that it all added up in the end. And to be fair, I think that I've done well. I come out of it as good as I have done, considering what it was like. And I can only describe it, looking back now, hell. It was hell.
Yeah, but like I say, Bill, you're a legend, man. Everybody knows you. Everybody's got massive respect for you.
I ain't a legend for finding a cure for cancer, am I?
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? A legend for what? Having a fight at a football match.
For being homeless at 14, it's coming through it, starting your own business, building a network of friends, building trust, like being loyal to what you believe in.
Loyalty and honour is the two main things in my life, loyalty and honour. Without them things, you know, you've got nothing. You might as well write them out of the dictionary next. Not many people have got them.
Yeah.
Courage, loyalty and honour.
Did that fuel you with a lot of anger going through your teenage years and getting into your 20s, Bill?
Not really, to be fair. I sort of like put it to one side. When you have things like that happen to you, you put it to the side of your mind and you get on with your life. And that's what I did, you know. I thought myself, oh, I don't know. You know, this ain't what it's got to be about. One night I was in the graveyard, and there was a hole in the fence I could get through, and there was no other way in. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I heard this noise, and this bloke sat in a chair about where you are from me now. And I looked at him, and I thought, myself, is he another pisshead, or what is he? You know what I mean? And we started talking, and he said to me, you won't be beaten, but you'll die a terrible death. That's what this thing said to me, this bloke said to me. And I thought, I'll tell him to fuck off in a minute. When I looked round, he'd gone. As quick as he came, he went. But that's what he said to me, you'll never be beaten, but you'll die a terrible death. And I always remembered that. I always remember, and my whole life, that was one of the things I always remembered.
That's a lot of torment, but that's a lot of mental abuse as well as physical. Did you ever speak to anyone about that?
When I was at primary school, I was very low on confidence. Used to get bullied a lot. And I got bullied so many times that they sent me to see this Dr. Brown to have hypnotherapy. And he only done it on two kids, one boy from Burnley and me. And I went in there, and first couple of sessions, I thought, this is nothing. You know, I didn't think it did nothing. And after I'd have a few sessions, I used to come out there feeling different. And from being like everyone bullying me, I stuck up for myself. And that's one of the things I've always been for, to stop bullying anybody, because either they're fat or they're ginger or they wear glasses. You know what I mean? I hate bullies. I will fight bullies all day long, and I'll fight them until I go in that box. Simple as that. But I had one boy there at school, primary school, he used to really have it in for me. And I didn't see him till I was 18 years old. And I went up to him and I said, hello, mate. And he looked at me like he didn't know me. I said, he said, sorry, I don't recognise you. I said, I went to school with you. I sat next to you and he looked at me. He went, oh, Bill Gardner. I went, yeah, that's right. But he didn't say it, oh, Bill Gardner. He said it in a way that was, you lump of shit, you know what I mean? So I punched him in the mouth. He's gone down. Has he got anything to say now? And he went, no. So I went off. And I felt good about that, that all the grief he gave me, the times he used to push me off the chair, you know, I thought, I've got my own back now. And that was it. I won't take liberties with people. If I beat them, I walk away. That's it. I don't take liberties. I'm not a liberty taker. I fight fair, you know, always have done.
Yeah, it's changed days now, Bill.
Yeah, it is.
How many West Ham games do you think you've been to over the years?
I've been going 62 years. Obviously, I was banned for 4 years. I couldn't go them 4 years. And I've most probably missed 30 in all the other years I've been going. And that's home and away. I go Europe, you know, if we play pre-season tournaments in Spain, Austria, I go all them. And the games we have played in Europe, I've gone to all them. And the clubs are very special to me. Not this place we play now. I hate it, and I don't like the owners now. But I'm not one of them that goes on about we've got to spend millions and millions and millions. I want the club to bring in youth, go out, get a good scouting network, bring all the best young players in, and make a team like that, you know, so that they're homegrown and you can get proud of them. I mean, like, we got Declan Rice who plays for us now. I know Declan's mum and dad quite well, because I go to New York with them once a year. We see each other out there. And he's a nice lad, and I wish him well, and I think he'd be the next one to go from West Ham, because he's ambitious. He wants to win things, and it don't look like we'll win things. It's Europe this year, but I don't think they should all get carried away too much. It won't last long. We're West Ham, you know, we ain't them big clubs that win things. Yeah, well, he's a good boy, Declan. When we went to Germany, we had a coach, and he got on the coach and he shook everyone's hand on the coach and thanked us all for coming. And when my mate Dennis, God bless him, died last year with cancer, he went round Dennis's house and saw him, and it made Dennis's day, you know. And he done the same for another friend I've now got, Chaz, who's got a brain tumour, and he sent him a message, and he's a genuine nice fella, and I wish him well.
Yeah. He's not really happy that he's getting to Europe. Is that the only third time West Ham's been in Europe, finishing sixth last season?
75-6 we went. We went 80-81, and then we went before in 65. And I went to the home games, but not the away games in them days.
What was your first away game for West Ham?
Middlesbrough.
Do you remember it?
I remember the train full of people. The last two games of the 58 promotion season I went to, I was nearly five. Middlesbrough and Liverpool, yeah. My dad, why he ever took me up to Middlesbrough? Because, you know what, Middlesbrough's known as the nonsense capital of Europe. At the minute, Middlesbrough's a bad place. And I think he took me up there for some reason, I don't know. But I ended up coming back, and I remember the train was full of all the clout and blue colours were everywhere, and I enjoyed it. I felt, this is me, you know what I mean? I felt, you know, I was only a little boy, like I said, but I felt, I like this. This is what I want to do.
You've been there for generations now. Like, firms must have changed through the years. How do you feel it is for 40 years ago to now?
Well, now, over at that new stadium, that you told we've got now, which I hate, is we've got all these tourists. They have a day out. They go to Madame Tussauds, they have a bit of lunch, go to West Ham. It's their day out. They get in there, they have a 2-gallon packet of popcorn, ink bucket of Coca-Cola, you know what I mean? And they not got the passion that the older ones have got. We could still be a big club. I think we could still be a big club. The fans need to get behind the team. Although we hate the board, we need to get behind the team more. And I think if we do, we'd make it a better day out for everyone and all. You know, everyone goes home with the ump. But if you have a laugh in the day, it's not so bad, you know? That's the way I look at it. And but I don't like it over there. The walk to it, for older people, the walk is like a day's exercise on its own, you know what I mean? I mean, I do a lot of walking and cycling. And my day's exercise is getting there and back, you know, that's the way it's become now. But
you hated Millwall. I don't think you spoke to a Millwall fan in over 50 years, is that correct?
No, I didn't. And then I've got two mates that are Millwall fans now. They're just a little bit younger than me, and they're really nice people. But we never got on. It's the same with them. They say the same, and I had a phone call from a mate of mine who runs, I'm not sure if it's Fairburn House Boxing or West Ham Boxing Club, and he was in hospital visiting Tiny, who was one of the top people over at Millwall. And he said, I'm in hospital with Tiny. He's got a growth in his neck the size of a grapefruit. He said, and could you have a word with him? And I thought, what do you say to your enemy? You know what I mean? So I got on the phone to him and I said, look, I'm ever so sorry you are like you are. If there's anything I can do to help, I will. We've always been enemies and we always will be, but I've got respect for you and I always know you as Tiny, the lion of Millwall. And my mate got back to me and said, he's in tears. And I thought to myself, that. And people said to me, why did you say that? Why didn't you say you were a right cunt? I said, no, you can't say that to a man who's dying. You've got to have a bit of respect, you know? And the poor bugger went, you know? But I don't know. When you get older, you hear more and more people go with it. Young people don't think they're ever going to get it. They're not going to get this COVID. Believe me, you will cop it if you ain't careful, especially when they're all over each other, you know what I mean?
What about, who's the strongest firm you've ever come up against?
I think Millwall. I think Millwall in a couple of them games we played.
How many people?
Oh, more than 300 aside, you know what I mean? But they had a lot, they when we went over there, they used to all turn out. And I got nothing but respect for them. I think that they're all right. You know, they got they're quite humorous. They've done a few funny things with like they had an helicopter go over Wigan with Avram Grant, hero, I think, Avram Grant.
What's that experience then? What's that adrenaline when it's 300 against 300? Like, is it just a free for all or?
Yeah, free for all, really. Like they say in the film Zulu, mark your target when they come. You know what I mean? You know which one you're going to have. I always used to go for the one at the front who was the mouthy one. I used to always go for that one because I always believe you take off the top of the... You cut the tree at the bottom, the tree will fall. So that's what I used to do. But a lot of them books that people have written in about me, unbelievable.
How many books do you think you've been in?
About 30. About 30 where they've given me a mention. I would say 28 of them are packs of lies. They're just people that are looking to get their ego going. You know what I mean? My book's truth, 100% truth, every word. I didn't have to glamorise it, sensationalise it. You know, people say about me in there and people talk about me and I get all this... They say, like, you know, what I was and what I wasn't at, but that was what I was. That ain't what I'm like now. You know what I mean? I'm a family man. I live in the country. I do country things, you know?
Change days, Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
You seem to have a heavy heart, though, as well. You seem to be carrying a lot of pain, and I can understand that through the life that you've led at the very start. You seem very emotional when you talk
about
that.
Yeah, I am. And, you know, in my other film I did get emotional a couple of times. But if you live that life, you would carry something with you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, the two things that I regret is not keeping in touch with my daughter and the other one was being born. They're the two things I regret. I couldn't change. You know, I didn't ask to come into this world. And if I was given the choice, I wouldn't. Simple.
Why?
I'm just not happy. You know, I'm happy with my girlfriend, I'm happy with my kids. I'm happy when I get a football, but deep inside I'm not happy. Who would be? You know, who would be when you took beatings off you, people who should love you? Never put their arm around me once. All right, son, never come and watch me play football, my dad, till I was 26. My last game, he come and watched me and I scored and I was well happy doing that. But just like not having nothing, you know? Not having nothing. I mean, I'm a big hoarder now. I collect things now that I should have had when I was a kid, which I didn't have. And I think that's what it is. I got that regret of not having that lifestyle. But she kept it a big, big secret. Everyone thought she was the gloating mum, you know? Never thought. Unbelievable.
Just feel as if you were neglected your whole childhood.
They used to feed me, they used to clothe me, you know what I mean? I had no love. But sometimes I feel guilty for the way they was to me. I've said to Mozza when we done the book, I'd like to apologise. He said, why? Why should you apologise? They did it to you, not you do to them. And I understood that, but I go to my mum and dad's grave every 4 weeks. I clean it. I change the flowers because I don't put fresh flowers on. I put plastic ones, but I put different ones on. She used to like lots of colours, so a grave used to look like a Rastafarian's died there. You know, it was loads of colour. But at the end of the day, I do that as a mark of respect, as part of respect. You know, they was my mum and dad. And I still love them, you know what I mean?
I think that shows your character, though, that everything you've went through, and you're still showing that loyalty to someone who treated you badly.
If somebody's a friend for me, they're a friend for life, and I will do anything for them. I will lay my life on the line for a friend.
You don't get many people like that anymore, that everybody's out to get...
Yeah, what they can, make a few quid. Yeah. I've met a few like that that want to try and make a few quid or use my name and make a few quid. But at the end of the day, it's part of life. It's water under the bridge. You learn and you move on, you know? I'm not one for being upset for years and years because somebody's had me over for a few quid or nothing like that. But what I do is I never give it in. I never give nothing in. So if I was to take a really bad beating and I'd be in hospital for a year, I guarantee within 2 years I'll get my own back. They have to kill me to beat me. As simple as that. I will not be beaten. There's something in me that says, no, no, you've had enough. You keep on fighting. And that's what I do. Whether or not it's to do with my children, my childhood, I don't know. I think a lot of people, if I sat down with somebody, they might say, all this is due to your childhood, you know? But I've never ever looked at it like that, in all fairness. You know, I just got on with life.
Did you go to Russia with West Ham?
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Oh, unbelievable. 9 inches of snow in Moscow and 70 degrees in Tbilisi when we went down there. Yeah.
What was the score?
We won 1-0. We were 4-1 down. They're the best team I've ever seen at West Ham. They were fantastic.
What year was that?
Oh, I don't know. It must be 81, 2, I think, something like that, wasn't it? Tbilisi. Yeah, because with the 76 we played Armenian team. And yeah, Dynamo Tbilisi, but it's 4-1 at home and they were fantastic. And anyone was there would say they were just unbelievable. But to beat them 1-0, I think they took the foot off the gas. But there was, I think there was 400 of us went out there all together. We was all on the coaches and when we went in the ground, everyone had a uniform on. In them days, it was the days of, you know, the Soviet Union. And we had a row of people in uniforms in front, a row of uniforms, but they could have been postmen. You know what I mean? It was just, but they had a big sign, "Welcome to the Sportsmen of England," along the side of the side of the ground. We treated us very well. Russians are all right. They used to come knocking on your door. "Do you want to change money up on the black market?" You get four times as much money off of matey boy knocking on the door than you did in the bureau change. So they bought everything, jumpers, bags, you name it. We knew when we went out there what it'd be like. So there was chewing gum, so I loved the chewing gum. And cassettes, you know, the old cassettes. Oh, God, I hated Elton John. I bought four of them in the airport, knocked them out. Yeah, unbelievable. They were a funny bunch. And in them days, there was very oppressed people. We went on a coach trip and me and my mate Steve Bean, we went down on the metro. And the metro in Moscow is unbelievable. It's chandeliers everywhere and it's marble. It's lovely. It's really a pleasure to go down there. And it was good. I enjoyed that.
West Ham have had some legends play for them. You get Bobby Moore, Frank McAvaney. I've got to give a shout out to my brother Frank, Tony Cotties, Julian Dix, Tevez, Frank Lampard.
Loads of them, yeah.
Who's the best player you've ever seen?
For me, in my lifetime, I'm going to have to go for Bobby Moore. Because he couldn't run, he couldn't head, but he was the best because he was three steps ahead of everyone. He was the best player I've seen, but I also liked Di Canio and Tevez. I liked them a lot, and Trevor Brookin. A West Ham fan can name a team of lousy players quicker than he can name a team of good players. We could name eight teams of bad ones and about three teams of good ones. That's the way it is. That's what it's like, West Ham. Look, I know a Millwall player, he said to me once, "You're glory hunters." Well, I like to know where the glory is because I ain't seen it, and nor have a lot of people my age and generation. You know, they've just not seen that. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see us playing the Champions League, just one game. Even if it was like a preliminary round, you know. Just one game and I'd die happy, man. Simple as that. But, you know, they done well last year and I'll go to the European Games this year and look forward to it. But like I say, my two mates are really bad who I normally go with. Well, actually, one's dead and one's not good. And they'd be solely missed.
Why do you think the Canu was so loved, even though for a short stint at West Ham?
Passion. He had passion. It was like one of us out there playing, you know. All teams have this one player or two players that have come along in a generation that have got passion for their club. Any football sport you ask will always have these people. You know, I mean, Man United liked Di Canio, didn't they? Not Di Canio, what's his name? The Frenchman.
Cantona.
Cantona, you know, he had passion. I mean, there's been plenty of them, you know.
I remember Di Canio's goal against Manchester United, the scissor kick.
Yeah.
And it right in the bottom.
And against Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You don't want against Wimbledon.
Yeah, there's been some players. Why do you think the West Ham fans are so loyal as well, even though you've not had any success?
I think it's down to originating where we come from. West Ham is a working class team from a working class area. A lot of the people used to work on the docks or at Fords, like my dad. My dad worked at Fords. My uncle and my granddad were stevedores on the docks. And that was before they had big cranes to lift the stuff up. They used to stick the hook in the bananas, put the bananas on their back and carry them up the ladder. I had a picture of my uncle. He was a circus strongman, my uncle. And I got one of a big banana spider on his jacket. Unbelievable. But they was always striking. They'd be outside the gates. People used to come out, we want 10 people for the sugar boat. And, you know, they get picked or they didn't. And if they didn't, they went in the pub and got pissed. That's what they did. My uncle was a fiercely strong man. He lifted a grand piano above his head. And I saw him lift two blokes up. Two blokes were sitting in chairs and he picked them up by the back legs of the chair like this. He was 6 foot tall and about 8 foot wide. He was so big and strong, you know what I mean? He had muscles on his arms like tops of my legs. He was big. And he was like the black wolf of our family. I used to get on well with him, to be fair. He died in old people's home, racing an old girl with a toilet on Zimmer frame. they banged into each other. He went over at his head and died. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, what a way to go. Them days, I don't know. I don't regret anything. If I did go back and my life I've had, I wouldn't change 1 minute of it, because I think I've done more good than bad in my life. And whether or not I'll go up there or down there, like I say, we'll have to wait and see if there's anywhere we do go. But if I go down there, you better watch out. Like I said, I ain't coming fucking peacefully. You know what I mean?
If you're going anywhere, Bill, I can guarantee it'll be a good place, man. You've got such a good soul. Like, I interview so many people, but you're a good man. Like, you're loyal. I can feel your passion. You wear your hat on your sleeve. Like, yeah. I can feel your emotion. I can feel this is emotional for you. Like,
yeah.
You've been through some shit, but you're still here fighting, and that shows your true character. Like,
thank you.
There's not many people like that. A lot of people would have jumped out and pulled the string quicker to get to fuck, because...
Yeah.
That's a painful experience to the shit that you went through, yeah. But that shows how strong a man you are, still here.
Thank you.
Nearly 68.
I appreciate
well loved, well respected. Two books out, you've been mentioned in many other books. That's people want to be surrounded by you. They want to mention you because it gives them some credit.
Yeah.
But that shows you what you've achieved in life. Yeah. You might not feel it, but there'll be a lot of people look up to you for inspiration. Remember a kid who was homeless to run his own business?
Yeah.
That takes massive courage to not let life defeat him.
Yeah, I'd like to help people that are like that. You know what I mean? I've always said to my Sarah, one Christmas, why don't we go and help these people who've got nothing? But you have to fill in so many bits of paper. It's like all red tape and that. And nah, let's give it a miss. You know what I mean? I would like to do that. I would like to help kids that are down on their luck. Because what people don't know is everyone on the street, not all of them, are there for a good reason. A lot of youngsters are there for the same reasons I went through, and there's thousands of people like it. But what I learned was that when somebody's on the street, you always look. If they've got clean hands, they're not homeless, because you do get dirty hands. You know, you wash them, they get dirty quickly, you know? Mm-hmm. And like I say, when I was homeless, I never, ever put the hat out for any money. I never ponced. I worked. And that's the way I've always looked. I've always worked. I've never ponced or made money out of anything dodgy or nothing like that. I've led a squeaky clean life, to be fair, as far as that's concerned. But I would just like that, you know, I was in Greece 1 year, and this old lady was outside the restaurant, all her hands bandaged up. She's in the curb screaming. And I was eating, and I said, the state of her. She said, yeah, it's bad, isn't it? I said, I'm going to give her some money. So I went out, and I give her 10 euros or something. And the next night, we're at the top of the island, which you can only get to by car, and she's come round the tables again. And I thought, hold on a minute. So what I did is I followed her around the back, and she was having a divvy up with her money. So I sat down, and she came round to my table. I said, look, lady, I'll give you 10 euros the whole night. Fuck off. Because I knew she was con. You know, she's conning us all. She wasn't homeless at all. But you can always tell with them, you know, the clean look. Or a lot of them use the dog now.
But that gets me.
If you're homeless, how can you afford to feed your dog, you know? And there are some genuine ones out there. But I would like to help the youngsters and show them that the streets of London ain't paved with gold. They're paved with cold, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's something, and, you know, I had, I was sitting in a doorway in Oxford Street because it's light, you know what I mean? You've got the lights from the shops, it lights everything up, and there was a Wimpy bar there. And this bloke went in the Wimpy bar, pinstripe suit. He come out, he had a bite out of his burger, opened it, spit in it, and put it on top of the bin. And he went about 20 yards down the road and he was looking back. And at that time, I was so hungry, I wiped his spit out and I ate it. And I thought, what kind of person does that? But when you're homeless and you're young, you get propositioned a lot. I used to have a lot of people. I had about, in the 11 months I was out there, I think I had about 10 or 11 of them. All right, son, would you like to come home for a nice bath and a nice meal? And I thought, yeah, I know what you're after. You know what I mean? I said, no, thanks, thank you. I'll give that a go. Yeah. I'll give that a go, you know.
It's scary. I made a homeless documentary. I slept on the streets for 7 days through Christmas.
You know what it's like,
and I stopped for Christmas Day. I always knew I was going home. People always say we're not scared, but I never really slept much because I was always on guard because there's people who get stabbed in their sleep, get urinated on, set on fire. But it was to give people an understanding that we're all human. Like, I'm surprised you never turned to drink or drugs, because when I was sitting on the streets, it's like a world within a world.
Yeah.
It's like I didn't exist. Nobody cared. Like, there's so many good people. Don't get me wrong, there's so many soup kitchens, so many people offering clothes. Yeah. But it doesn't really change the mindset. If you're low in confidence, low in self-esteem, if you've been abused as a kid, then it's hard to then run your own house. It's hard to go and get a job because you feel worthless.
Yeah.
It's trying to change the mindset to show people that they are good enough.
Everyone can be homeless like you did, but you knew you was going home at the end of it. Not knowing what your future holds for you is a whole different kettle of fish, you know? Mm. I just didn't know what anything would hold for me. But like I say, I got married when I was just 18. I was married for 2 years. It didn't work. We weren't right for each other. And then I got married again for another 10, and I was happy with her. But I needed kids. I wanted kids. And then, like I said, I've been with Sarah for 40 years now. And she's my soulmate. She's my best friend. She's seen me when I'm rock bottom, when I'm so low, my arse was on the floor like a snail. You know what I mean? But she's stuck with me, and she's a good girl. And I love it a bit, and my boys.
Do you respect that loyalty of people who give you love?
Oh, they give me that, they get it back, you know what I mean? They get it back, simple as that. People don't realise that them little things in life are really important. And at football, when some days we've had a row and I didn't think one particular person had pulled his weight, I would never go and slag him off, but I used to put my arm around him. You're right, mate, you know what I mean? Because all the words in the world, that little physical touch on the shoulder, little pat on the back, that's what motivates people. You can motivate somebody by doing that. Words go in it one ear and out the other, but the actual physical touch on the shoulder, you're all right. You know what I mean? That goes well with them. Anyone can use that in life. You just have to understand human nature.
Yeah. When I was doing the homeless documentary, it wasn't the money that you were receiving, a few pounds a day, it was the 5 minute chat that somebody stopped and asked you how your day was. That was the gold for me. That was to show that people care. Now, there's thousands walk past you. Other people are struggling themselves. I know people that's got 2 and 3 jobs who struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've not got time to really see that there's somebody lying on the streets. I get that people's in a fast paced world, but the people who do take the time and how's your day? Would you like a Siamese? Like, those people are golden. Yeah. These people, the world can be a good place as well. There's so much goodness out there.
Yeah, there is some good people, some great people out there, you know, that do a lot for everybody. I mean, like I say, my two mates, the one who's died, Dennis, and my mate Chaz, who's not well now, would do anything for anybody. I was once told by my mate Chaz, he said, there are two types you will meet, givers and takers. Surround yourself with givers. And he's spot on, you know what I mean? I will remember that for the rest of my days. That's spot on. You don't want to be surrounded by takers.
Yeah. The 80s must have been tough with the football stuff. Was that when Thatcher tried to slam it down?
Yeah, yeah.
How was that?
Thatcher used it for, after the miners, she quashed the unions, it was a football fan's turn. So what they do, they had all the people that was high-ranking in the clubs to have a meeting with her, and it was mentioned in the court case. They went for a meeting, and what they did is, instead of really doing the research and really mixing in with the people, they just picked names. Names that people that had reputations but were maybe not doing it. I mean, when I went to court, there was 11 of us, and I didn't know five of them. I said, what are you here for? He said, I'm with you. I thought, fucking hell, I don't even know you. And then we sat there, and obviously I knew Andy, and I knew Cass, and I knew Ted, and Paul Dorset, and I sat there, and I... Who are these boys here, like, you know? And like I say, I sat there the first day, and in a court case like that, you get a lot of legal argument, you know. They sod the jury off and have their little moans and that, and then the jury comes back. But I thought, no, the next day I bought a big load of paper in, pens, and I done a graph on all their names. And every time somebody did a bad thing about somebody, I put a cross. When they said a good thing, I put a tick. So I was working it out who was in the shit and who wasn't. You know what I mean? And I knew we was going to get over that before the end. I said, look, there's hardly bad points against us. It's all bullshit. And I actually looked at the jury because my mum was a bit deaf. I used to like lip read. And I used to watch the jury. And there was two older people there. And when the policeman was giving his evidence, she looked round and she went, load of shit this is. And I thought, we're halfway here. You know, it was a 9-2, and they kicked one out because he knew one of the coppers. So it was very interesting. It was very interesting. It's like a game. The police are having a game with us, and we're having a game with the police. And it's the same in the court. A lawyer, the QCs, pit their heads against each other, but they all know each other. They're all friends. They all went to the same university, and it was something that I took a lot of interest in what was going on there, and I thought, so I wish you'd have learnt when you was at school. You know what I mean? I mean, my youngest boy, Danny, now his girlfriend's a solicitor in family law, and in all fairness, I think, I wish I'd have done something like that. I wish I had the brains to do that, you know? Should have listened and turned up more, you know?
What was that? What would you have expected if you got a guilty?
10 years.
Fuck.
Minimum 10 years.
What?
Yeah, because that's what the Chelsea boys got before us, year before they got done. They got 10 years. And when we had the evidence looked at by this thing called ESDA, which is they get the paper and they put this black powder on it and they shake it thousands of miles an hour on a machine. And anyone who's wrote anything on top on another piece of paper, it comes through, it fills in. And you could see they'd put the dates in months later to make it look more, you know. And also that when you write... People write the same on some of these logs. The bottom 10 rows was forced in there. It wasn't natural, you know. So we smelt a rat on that. We paid, I think, £400. They wouldn't give us legal aid to do it. So £400 to have it done, and it come out that they was lying. I was actually in the box the day that they called it off. And the prosecutor got up. He was an honourable man. He said, it's come to light that the... the integrity of the police logs is, you know, not good. And the judge, who was the most... He had no sense of humour. They picked one with no sense of humour. His name was Judge Hitchens. And there was a couple of really funny moments in the trial where they got one policeman to give evidence. He was off sick. And he walked funny up to the dock. And the judge said, "Oh, you're right, do you want a chair?" And he went, "No, it's all right." He said, what's the problem? And he went, "Piles." And when he said piles, we was all beyond a thing laughing. All you could see was heads going up and down. He warned us all he was going to hold us in contempt of court. And Oh, it was funny. He was up there, and then they had another one who was suspended for biting a bloke's ear off in a pub. He wasn't even supposed to wear his uniform when they're suspended, but the high-ranking officer told him to wear his uniform. And but the clerk of the court had a picture of the bloke who'd had his ear ripped off, and as he walked past the jury, he had it facing them. So as he's going by, they're all going like this, looking at it. Unbelievable. You couldn't make it up.
What's the best West Ham game you've ever been to?
The best?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. The best. There's been lots of good ones, but I think more of bad ones than good ones. I think most probably that game in Russia sticks in my mind because we won and, you know, they was a great team, and although we got a little bit of pride back, that was quite nice. Some of the cup games we've had in the past have been decent. We've also had some right shit. There's more things a West Ham fan can write what was wrong than what was right, you know what I mean? As simple as that.
I've spoke to a few people who's been involved in like the football stuff. Calvin Leach, Baz Barrington, Birmingham.
Yeah, he's not well, guy. Baz, is he?
Yeah,
I like to wish him well, Baz, you know, because Cass told me he's not a bad bloke. So
yeah, he's a real good
Baz,
guy.
Baz, if you're going to watch this, I wish you well, mate, all right?
Yeah, I got a lot of love for Baz and him and his Mrs. Tracy. I spoke to a younger boy, Dante. He's Tottenham, though, but he's a younger generation. Like,
yeah, he is,
but they're all solid, all loyal, all show you love and respect. Obviously, you wouldn't want to cross these people because they would fucking tear your head off, but every man I've spoke to who's been involved in what they're involved in have all been solid 100%. Like, is that what makes it so good to be part of some sort of family, like some sort of little army to them?
I mean, what I would say to you is this. In the past, I've found that the bodybuilder type at football, once they taste their own blood, they don't fancy it because they like looking at themselves in mirrors too much. And so the big musty things, I know that Baz does the fighting and that, and good luck to him. But the young boy, Dante, who sometimes has too much to say, but, you know, that's him. Good luck to them all, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What about Calvin Leach?
Calton's a lovely bloke, he's so funny.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Calton. I've met Calton, he's been on the show.
He makes me roll up.
Yeah, he's funny, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a proper character back in the day.
Yeah, great character.
Well up for it, man.
He's
front
got
line.
A nice chapter in my book. Mm-hmm. And he's a good lad. He's a good lad. I've always liked Calton.
Yeah. Why were you never connected with the ICF stuff then? Because
they were all younger than me.
Because
much younger.
That was
they're all much
later
younger
down
than me.
The line.
60, I think. I'm 60, 70, 68. So when you're a kid, 8 years older than another person, it was quite a lot, you know. When you get to 40 and somebody's 32, it's not so bad. But when you're 20, somebody's 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I love Carlton a bit. He's a great bloke. And Cass, the good people.
Yeah, Cass is a legend
Cass,
as well.
Cass has always helped me.
Why do you think that West Ham, the ICF, have got such a big reputation?
Well, them boys done it all, you know what I mean? They done it all. Like I say, the people I used to go with, we had no name, we had no gang name. We just went, we were mates who went together. And like I say, we was before them because of our ages. I mean, my mate Ted's 3 years older than me, you know what I mean? He's the oldest one in town, I think, now. But like I say, we were all great mates. I phone him up every Christmas morning, wish him well. And there's good people in there. Lots and lots of them have been really, really loyal and good to me. And I'll never ever forget that. That when I had nothing, they was there for me, you know what I mean? So I will always be there for them, all of them. Every one of my mates who stood with me all through them last 52 years, whatever it is, out of 62, I went, I don't forget none of them. Some of them come from all over the world, you know? Malta, Finland, good people that have backed me.
Do you miss it, Bill? Do you miss the madness of the past?
You never. I'll be honest, my life now is very peaceful. like I say, I'm involved with a lot of birds, and I don't mean the two-legged ones. I mean ones with feathers. Yeah, I like that. I like zoos. I like animals, horses. You name it, I like it. But deep down inside, anyone who's led the life I have, you have that passion still in your heart and in your belly. And you know, something goes off and you think, fucking hell, come on, let's get in there. And then you sit down and you think, hold on a minute. You ain't well. You're getting on. Give it a miss. You know what I mean? But you never take that fire out of a man. You know what I mean? It's like if you take a racing driver out of a car for 30 years and you put him back in, he'll want to win the bloke next to the bloke next to him. You never lose that will to win. But you just have to realise that you have to move on. You have to move on. I moved on. You know what I mean? I moved on. I'm the same as what Carlton said. I sometimes think, what's this fucking idiot here talking? You know what I mean? Talking a load of shit next to me. And you feel like, oh, give him one. But you think, no, give it a miss.
Is it hard to stop, especially being involved for 30, 40 years to then?
Oh, very hard.
To walk away and go?
Very, very hard, very hard.
What age were you when you decided, right, I'm kind of going to try and live a life of peace? And
after I got nicked.
Was it?
Yeah, after I got nicked and I thought myself, hold on a minute, you don't need this anymore. I thought, if you carry on like this, you're either going to end up dead or mad. So I decided that mad was the better option.
Was there times when, did you just thrive on it, like the madness?
Adrenaline. Once your adrenaline goes, anyone will tell you that's involved in any fighting or sport, the adrenaline's what keeps you going. And it doesn't matter if you're hurt. You don't hurt at the time because the adrenaline keeps you going. I know Carlton said it because he had the steroids and all that. I never took none of that shit. Mine was pure adrenaline. And that's what worked for me.
Did you ever take any second prizes, Bill?
No, I didn't, to be fair with you.
No,
I'll be honest. Never. There is no one you'll get here say that they give me a good hiding.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. And I was always fair with people. If I beat them, that was it. I wouldn't like kicking. Like nowadays, they do you and they kick you in the eyes till your eyes bleed. I won't do that. I used to beat people fair and square. I was strong, I was fit, I was fast, and I had a punch like a hammer. And that's what it was. And, you know, but no person can come up and say to me, I done you, you lying bastard. No, they can't, because they know they didn't. But them days are gone, you know what I mean? Water under the bridge.
Were you a target for some firms because of the reputation
that
you had?
No, not really. I never felt I was a target. I had a bit of abuse from a lot of them. Used to throw abuse across the road, you know what I mean? At Manchester United, they did it one year, threw a load of abuse. Went across the road towards them, the fucking attitude changed, you know what I mean? But no, there's good and bad in all teams. And, you know what I mean? I would never have a go at a person just because he supported another team, Tottenham, Arsenal. But if they want to have a go, that's a different kettle of fish. You know what I mean? You have to have lines to cross. And if somebody crosses the line, that's a different way, isn't it?
Were you ever outnumbered?
Oh, loads of times. Loads of times. A lot of time we bullshitted our way out of things. A lot of times we done crazy things that we shouldn't have done, like, you know, instead of like having it away on our toes, we'd attack them before they got to us, and even though we was outnumbered. And we'd done all right, you know, we did okay. And people say, yeah, all that, and never got done. No. Find somebody who says they did me. Yeah, that's the challenge I put out to all you people who are listening. Find someone. Find someone who give me a good hiding. And then you find people that I did it to, and I was fair with them. Most probably even helped them up. You know what I mean? That's the way I've led my life. I refuse to be beaten.
What's the best scrap you've ever been involved in?
Oh, best scrap I've been involved in. Oh. I had a few when I worked on the door in the clubs. We had some boys there one night that were throwing fireworks around and really misbehaving. And I said to them, look, fellas, you've got to calm it down a bit. And I went in there to throw him out and I said, come, you got to go. And he went, what, you and who? And I looked around and all the others had left me. So I said, yeah, just me. So we've gone out in the alleyway where your people come in. And I thought, so one of them had a beer mug. I thought, I'm going to get done here. So we had a door. And when you close the door, the angle off the door used to fall off. I went to the door. They thought I was trying to do a run. Instead of that, I closed the door and got the Andy Angle and went into them. A couple of my mates got done that was there that night by them. And then I fought the biggest one outside. And the police come and put the dogs on us. We both got nicked. Both went to court and got away, I think, with... I think they'd done us just for disturbing the peace or something like that. Because two of them got done and two of my mates got done, it was like
self-defence kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel lucky never to have got the jail bill?
I done remand for a few days and that was enough for me. I like I said, I like being outside. I like breathing fresh air. I like everything like to do with nature. I don't. When I was inside, I didn't like pissing in the bucket and eating all that shit. When I was in there, I did give the babes in the wood killer a good hiding in the toilet.
Who was he?
He killed two kiddies in Brighton. He's called the babes in the wood killer. He got away with it. He got out and he done another two kids. But when he was in there for the first time, he was on remand in Brixton in what they call Fraggle Rock, where all the monsters are, yeah? But he had to come into our bit in the hospital, because I was in the hospital bit, to go have a piss. And all the boys in there were geeing me up. Go on, go and give him one. The coppers won't go anywhere because I was on crutches. So in the toilets in there, they have like the top so you can look over. And I've gone through the door like a Western and I've done him on the pan. You know what I mean? And the coppers come in and pulled me away and that. And I forget what, Russell Bishop his name was, the babes in the wood killer. Yeah, yeah, I copped him one. Yeah,
yeah,
he got his comeuppance.
Yeah, bastard, man.
Yeah.
So what do you, when Upton Park, I know you get emotional when you spoke about that. Leaving
I was the last one out of the ground for the two nights, the last Saturday, last Tuesday, I was the last one out. And like I say, it was... I can't put in words what it was like for me. It was like my life had ended and I'd have to start again. And I did give it a go over that new place. I give it 3 years and it ain't the same, you know. Like I say, I've got nothing against... I don't like the owners, I want them out, but I just want to have somebody in there with ambition. They ain't even got to have money, ambition. Want to be the best, want to win, you know. Not everything a pound note. Everything is a pound note with that lot, you know what I mean? Gold, Sullivan, Brady, it's all money, 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 money. No. Not for the fans, it ain't. You know, the fans want success. We want to have a team to be proud of and win something. Because the feeling when you support a team and they win something, especially like us when we don't win nothing for donkey's years, them days out are fantastic, you know. And people really enjoy them. I've seen the joy on people's faces when we've had good days out. But, you know, that's life now, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, everything's
money. Who do you support in Scotland?
Celtic.
Celtic.
Macca Vini. I've had Macca on. I love Macca. He's a funny bastard.
He's
a funny bastard. I'm good friends with Macca now, but I know he's good friends with Tony Cotty. And he smashed it with West Ham. Did he not score like 15 or 20 goals when he was down here? But he was a party boy. He was always in string fellows with all the page threes.
Yeah. He was like one of us on the pitch, you know. I mean, the way he lived, his life, you know.
Yeah.
Man, fantastic. Yeah, I liked Frank a lot. Like I say, that season when he scored all the goals when we finished third. But after that season, we finished third. That club should have gone out and bought three or four top class players so they could do better than third. But they didn't do it. Once again, who we had in charge there now? I think it was Terry Brown who was the chairman there. They looked at it. Oh look, we're. We'd finish third, that's all right. Next year we'd do the same. And they didn't invest. They didn't invest in the future. We needed to invest. And in all fairness, a lot of people didn't like Terry Brown, but I got to know him a little bit and I thought he was all right. And that we had a museum at West Ham at one stage and everything in the museum Terry owned. And when he fucked off, he took it all with him. So all we had was empty shelves. You know what I mean? Youth cups and all that. Oh, Terry had them all. We used to spend fortunes on programmes at programme fairs. I know he did. And nobody can say he wasn't a West Ham fan because he truly was.
Yeah.
But these three, I don't know. They say they are, and no, not for me.
But you must be proud of West Ham finishing sixth last season. They had a great season. They could have probably finished
higher as
well.
Yeah, we've done well, but once again, we lost the goalkeeper for two periods. That cost us. And we should have bought. We should have bought in the January window when we got rid of the striker and got another. We should have got another one in, and it might have made the difference. Because Michael Antonio, although he's doing great up front, he's not really a striker. He's a wide player. He always played all his wide football at Tootenham Mitcham, wide. And that, I believe, is his strength. But we need strikers. What Premier League team goes into a season with only one striker? Everyone has four. Every team in any league has four strikers, not us, one.
When was it? Was it Tevez and Marciano? What was the other kid's name? Two Argentinian boys. Remember you bought them?
The one who went. There was Tevez and
Marciano. Was it
Mascherano?
Or something. Well, how did that
Mascherano was a T-shirt, isn't it?
It was something like that. But how did... Because Tevez ended up one of the best players on the planet. Like, did he not
everything.
Go to Man U and then...
Yeah, give everything.
I think he went to Italy.
He gave everything.
Yeah. What a player, that. Mm-hmm. The Premiership is all money now. It's all changed. Like,
football now is not owned by, like it was in the past, the garage owner, the ship owner, the billionaires. Every club's got these billionaires. And... it's, like I say, it is a business. It is a business. But to the fans, it's a football club. It's a team you support. It's a team you want to do well. But it ain't for me, you know what I mean? I just want to see that word I've said to you a few times, ambition. Not the big spending, but ambition. We want to do well. You know, even little clubs in non-league football have that ambition, you know what I mean? I mean, my boys are involved with Corinthian Casuals in the Bostic Premier League. My oldest boy's the manager, and my youngest one, Danny's the goalkeeper. He's played 500 games for them. And they've got ambition. They're ambitious, but they're amateur. Nobody gets paid. What, that boy you played with on Sunday, Kieran,
yeah,
he plays for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one who come on, one who's bought brothers at Celtic. Not Celtic, at Chelsea. Adoy.
Oh, yeah.
He's been with us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we've got ambitions. We don't want to be a bottom team. We want to do well, even though we've got no budget at all. Mm-hmm.
I've got to give a shout out to Dougie and what's the other? Dougie and...
Terry Sampard.
Dougie and Terry. Two great guys. I met them at the West Ham Legends game playing against Harvey's 11 from So Solid Crew. Harvey, great guy. West Ham Legends, great guys. But these two, I spoke to them after the match, absolute legends, and they couldn't speak any higher of you, man. Like, showed you so much love and respect. But these two guys were diamonds. I think Terry's, is he the cab driver?
Yeah, he's a mad cab driver that always gets on Talk Sport Radio. Doogie's a good bloke. And when with no football, he got me in at Dorking to watch a few games, like, you know, because he knows the manager. So I had in the lockdown, I had five or six games I went, which I really enjoyed. Nice people at Dorking Wanderers Football Club.
Yeah, they put on that event. That was to raise money for homelessness.
Yeah, they are really nice people over
banks.
There.
Yeah.
Really nice. It's the same as, like I say, at Corinthian Casuals. We've got nice people. We're linked with Corinthians in Brazil, you know, mm-hmm. beat Chelsea in the world. We have a few Brazilians come over and come to our ground. They bring their rockets with them.
Mm-hmm.
Up goes the rockets. You know, I can see our chairman going, oh, my God, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't like it too much, but, you know. People enjoy themselves.
Yeah, the Brazilian fans are on the next level. So is the Italians. They're passionate.
Yeah.
Did you ever go with England? Did any firms ever come together and go with England?
No.
Never?
No, I went to the World Cup in 82 in Bilbao in Spain when we played. I went to Norway when Norway beat us. I'm not really a great follower of England. I watch them on the telly and I think I'm as passionate as anyone about my country. But West Ham's for me. I'd rather go to West Ham once than England 10 times. It's, you know, West Ham's everything.
Ah, the loyalty you have for that club is unbelievable.
But I've never been rewarded with it, mate. They've never said to me, look, we need somebody like you to come and work for us, try and get the fans behind us and that. They've never asked me. None of them have ever asked me that.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think they know that I'm too straight.
Because of the reputation
I'm
that you
too
have.
Straight, mate. I'm too straight. If you're a liar, you get found out. You nowadays, you can't lie about something. Somebody knows about everything. But no, not for me. I just hope the day comes when they sell up and we get somebody with that open ambition in their heart to give us back, because I think we could not only fill that ground, they're talking about making it 65,000. I think we could fill a bigger ground than that if we were successful.
Top four?
Yeah, top three or four. I think they'd definitely bang out every game, and I think they could fill a bigger ground.
Well, you gutted that you never got a Champions League this season. Because you're lingering about.
At a time, you know what I mean? I thought, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to see that one game, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't think we'd get in here and win it, but I thought that one game would do me. And no, it never happened. But I might be with this European thing that's coming. I'll go. I went before when we played the Astra. I mean, it sounds like a fucking car, doesn't it? we lost to a team with the name of a car. And I thought myself, you know, it was full of bugs. Everyone who went over there, I think there was 500 of us. Where their ground was full of midges. Everywhere you go, he was getting bit, you know what I mean? Mm. And, yeah, it's great, but, you know, West Ham have got loyal fans, very loyal fans. Stick by them through thick and thin, no matter how good they're doing, they still get a good average crowd, you know? But this mob in charge, they don't understand. I don't think they know they've got a captive audience, but they don't know how big we could become. I know we could be massive. I know people that have packed up that went for 20 and 30 years, they'd all come back. They'd all come back. I know a lot of them. A lot of the boys that are now doing this, Hammers United, you know, really good lads that are trying to do their best for the club, doing their best for the fans. Fantastic people.
What's it like from the kids now who have a tear up to then what it was like in the 80s and 90s? Everything changed.
I see a lot of it
with
now.
With cameras. Is it a dying game?
Yeah. The punishments don't fit the crime anymore. You know, if a kid had a fight outside a nightclub on a Friday night, he'd get a fine. You have a fight outside a football ground, you get 6 months, whatever happened. You know what I mean? So I think they're a little bit shrewder. They think to themselves, hold on a minute, I'm going to get this for doing that. It ain't worth doing. And it's a dying thing. I think that things will happen still, but not away from the grounds, like service stations where two coaches might pull in and get at it, you know, that sort of thing will happen. Mm-hmm. I think that will happen all over the country. But I think in grounds now, the police have it so sewn up, you know, they know where you're meeting, where you're going, you know, who's coming. You know, you turn up anywhere, the police are there before us, you know. You've got a couple of grasses on the firm, I think, that tell them. But I think all teams have. I know that I had some Chelsea mates were locked in a pub, and cops come in and they fingerprinted them. Nine of them were banned, they got nicked. And this fella said to him, you know, how do you know who's going to be here? He said, oh, we've got two or three people in with you that are grassing. So, and he said, don't worry, we've got some in at West Ham and all. So what I think they do is they nick somebody for something small, like drugs or something, and they say, look, you help us, we'll help you. You tell us what's going on. And I think that's what they do.
Yeah.
It's very hard to pick one out when he's squealing behind your back, you know?
Yeah, there's many like that now.
It's like when they said they was with us in the swoops. They supposed to have mingled with us. Yeah. They didn't mingle with us. Although some of their photos they took by their photographers showed them in a group, but they was never with the group. They was walking by and just turn around so they get in a photo and all that. We got the photos. These people would never fit into what we look like. Never.
Yeah.
It was terrible organisation whoever did it. If I'd have been the commissioner, I'd have sacked him.
Mm-hmm. There's more snatches now than coppers, though. That's just the way of the world now. Like, that's the way it is. Like, there's so many weak people. Like, there's hardly any loyalty. There's no love. There's no respect. Like, it's kind of a free for all. There's still good people out there, though. What do you think back? What do you think looking back in your life, Bill?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I wouldn't change the love I got for my football club. I wouldn't change the love I got for my family. I would like to have learnt more, stayed at school, learnt more, done something more with my life. I feel that I had something a little bit more to offer than what's in these books, you know. I feel that I could have maybe got myself a decent job doing something or other. I don't mind being in front of the camera. You know, I've done it a few times now. I quite enjoy it. I can get up and talk in front of hundreds of people. It wouldn't faze me. But it just seems that I spent a whole lifetime of lifting curbs out the road and laying them in and lifting paving stones and lugging up skips with wheelbarrows of concrete. And I thought, maybe you're a bit better than that. But that's what I did. That was my biscuit, and I've had to eat it.
Yeah, but you provided for your family. There's not it's an honest living.
Yeah, it is an honest living. It is an hard but honest living.
Mm-hmm. Let's touch on your book, Bill.
Yeah.
The Man, the Myth, the Legend. How was it writing this and putting this?
3 years. 3.5 years it took us to do it, me and Muzz. I used to go up to his place and he would take tapes and then convert the tapes into the written word. He's very good, Abe Attacher. I think he'll go on to become a really good author. I've got another couple of people I would like him to do that. Not the same sort of thing as me, but they've done real good in their life. One of my mates, Roy, he was a soldier. He's had a lot of heartbreak in his life. His missus died of a very rare complaint. He's one of my best mates, Roy. He's an Indian, and he's a lovely lad. You know, him and his family, I'm really close to. And I hope that Mozza goes on.
Yeah, because it says Bobby Moore was West Ham's leader on the pitch. Bill Gardner was West Ham's leader off it.
I think Carlton said that, didn't he?
Yeah. Because you were in the Rise of the Foot Soldier as well, the first one. The one with Carlton.
I never knew I was in it. I went to the pictures to see it. I'm sitting there with my missus, and all of a sudden it started, and I'm watching it, and there was this geezer that looked like one of the Chuckle Brothers. That was me. and when it came on and he said it was me, I just laughed. And the picture was quite full, and everyone looked at me. Why is he laughing? This ain't funny. They didn't realise that it's supposed to be me. I didn't look nothing like that in them days. Yeah. I really didn't.
You had the curly hair.
Curly hair. But... yeah, I did look like the Chuckle Brothers in that, but it did make me laugh. Yeah. I quite enjoyed that film. He was all right.
Yeah, the first one was good. Yeah, they've kind of overkilled it now.
Yeah, they've done it to death.
Yeah. I like Carlton. Got a lot, so much time for Carlton. Yeah. He's a good man. He's solid.
Yeah.
Going forward for the future, Bill, what's your plans?
To try and stay above ground for a few more years.
Yeah.
I've got a few more places I want to go and visit before I go. I want to go to Lake Constance in Germany, biggest freshwater lake in Europe. I've been there once before. I want to go back there and take my Sarah. I want to obviously go to the West Ham games, the European ones, and I'll go all the away games this year, and most probably half the home ones, because I'll go and watch my boys play, you know, at Corinthian Casuals. I enjoy that. I enjoy the people over there. They're all genuine.
Yeah. For anybody that's watching, Bill, that's maybe going through a battle, maybe struggling at home, or maybe it's fucking close to getting put on the street, what advice would you give for them?
Right, if you're being bullied, the first thing you do is you find the courage in yourself that when the bully starts, you steam into him. And if you lose, you lose. And you get up and you give it a few days and you steam into him again. And in the end, he won't come back. Believe me, they won't come back, because that's what they are, they're bullies. You fight back, they don't like it. Always fight back, never give up. And if you're at home and you're unhappy, try and talk to somebody. And, you know, there's plenty of people out there that would help, but be careful, because there's lots of dodgy people out there and all. But in all fairness, if I could help anybody, I would. But like I say, if you're a bullied person, get into them. Show them that you're not going to take it. You're not going to take the shit anymore.
Bo. For coming on today, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Thank
you're
you,
a good
mate.
Man, very honest, and I look forward to seeing what you do for the future. Listen, I'm rooting for West Ham now to get into the Champions League. I'd love to see you there at one of the games. Like, you don't know what the future holds. Like I say, you're West Ham through and through. It's in your blood, and you're a good man, Bill. And thanks for coming on and telling
your
story.
Thanks
God
for
bless
me.
You, brother.
Thank you.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.